You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com on WCRS-FM 98.3 and 102.1, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
This is Men Speak, about issues dealing directly with black males. Heard exclusively on the world's greatest radio, TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio the way it should be heard. I'm Kamario Dye.
And I'm Richard Lundy.
TalkTainmentRadio.com is the world's greatest radio. You're in touch with Men Speak with your host, Kamario Dye, along with my co-host, Richard Lundy. How you doing, sir?
And how are you this evening?
Okay, you, the first part of that didn't come through over here. I hope you got through. I'm doing well. Another great day in the hood.
Beautiful day out there. Beautiful day.
Yes, indeed. This is radio the way it should be heard. And as usual, we'd like to start off our show with some words of inspiration. And today's title is entitled, The Black Prince of Creation. Check this out. Daughter of the Earth, my mother sends you greetings. My father sends you warmth. And I, the Black Prince, the son of creation, radiate with love of my mother and the heat of my father in your presence, in love with you. Daughter of the earth, the first fruits of thy womb will bear my seed. I am the Black Prince of creation, and I claim thee my queen. Daughter of the earth, my sister, my love, my woman, black as the soil of our mother, black with the heat of our father's light. Love me, my mother commands, my father demands. I, the Black Prince of creation, I need you.
Right on.
Whoa, brother, you come up with some good stuff.
Yeah, brother, we got to have that good stuff.
Food for thought.
Yes.
Yes. And now here is the news. The Affordable Health Care Act. How does it benefit African Americans? March 31st was the deadline for all uninsured Americans to enroll in health insurance through the Affordable Health Care Act. Word has it that it will be extended until mid-April. The Obama administration officials had set an original goal of 7 million people, and it looks like they will reach their target. African Americans will benefit from the Affordable Health Care Act as a disproportionate percentage of blacks will become eligible for health care coverage. The AHCA will also open the door to preventive care, primary care, and specialty care for millions of African Americans. And for those who are already insured through employers, Medicare or Medicaid are not required to sign up. And those who can afford health insurance and choose not to purchase it through AHCA now face an individual shared responsibility payment penalty. The penalty for the remainder of this year is 1% of yearly income, or $95 per person for the year, whichever is greater. And get this, the fee increases each year. Sounds like a payoff to the insurance industry to me. A complete list of exemptions and how to apply is available on www.healthcare.gov/exemptions. All homicide victims are black in Arkansas capital. Mayor Stodola announced that he is forming a team to analyze current programs to help fight crime, poverty, and a failed education system, in addition to seeking collaborative opportunities between government agencies, members of the business community, and entrepreneurs to help reduce Little Rock's crime rate. He goes on to say he and other mayors around the country have looked at this major crisis and tried to stare at the hard, glaring facts, and that there is a disproportionate number of black young men and boys of color who are victims of police brutality and murder. One city official stated, black-on-black crime should be treated by officials as an abnormality, and warned that not creating a sense of urgency, given the magnitude of this crisis, sends a disturbing message to the black community. Now, black residents make up about 42.3% of Little Rock's population, according to the 2010 census. However, police records show that during each year since 2010, at least 68%. 68% of all homicide victims have been black. It's out of whack, folks. It's disproportionate. It's unacceptable. This could be any city, USA. Is there anything like this coming out of our mayor's office? Let us know about it. And finally, the United Nations General Assembly acknowledges horrors of the African slave trade, but silent in reparations. The United Nations General Assembly recently held a commemoration honoring the victims of the transatlantic slave trade. The March 20, 2001 ceremony remembered the more than 15 million men, women, and children who suffered and died during the 400-year slave trade, the longest forced migration in history, no matter what anybody else says, folks. President of the General Assembly noted that the international community admits that slavery and the slave trade were, in fact, crimes against humanity. The same determination reached at the 2001 World Conference Against Racism. Now, you may recall the United States boycotted the 2001 conference to avoid voting on this.
I remember that.
The Durban Declaration and Program of Action, also known as DPAA, stated that all nations would commit to ending racism, racial discrimination, and related intolerance, and would develop programs for alleviating poverty, inadequate education, and access to health care. The priority of the DPAA was restitution in the form of reparations for African people, based on the conclusion from the 2001 Durban Conference that the transatlantic slave trade is a crime against humanity. Not enough, noted Dr. Conrad Worrell, who was a member of the 2001 Durban Conference. For the resolution to be accepted and brought to the floor, it would take 50% plus one votes to pass. Now, if the General Assembly decides that the issue is important, quote unquote, then a two-thirds majority is required. To date, not one official, including the Office of the High Commissioner in General in Geneva, would speak about bringing the DPAA before the UN General Assembly. Brother Lundy, ain't no rest for the weary, black man.
You're right.
Oh, my goodness. And the saga continues.
Right.
And these, amongst other things, are things we're going to be talking about on a continual basis. We at Men Speak, we don't just put information out there one time and be done with it and saying that's enough, go on to something else, because most of these issues we're talking about are ongoing. And it needs to be brought up because a lot of us are still asleep.
Right.
And they need to be brought to their attention.
Right.
So, and that is what's making news on Men Speak, Brother Lundy. What we got in store for today, man?
Well, and just piggybacking on something you said in the news scenario, a couple of things that you talked about. You talked about the reparations. We talked about that a little bit last week, so we probably going to cut that up a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
And we also talked about the Obamacare Act and how it affects black people. And again, I think that you can't talk about that enough because there's so many black people out there that don't know what's going on. They don't know what the new guidelines are. They don't know if they qualify, don't qualify, do they have to get. They don't understand that $95 penalty.
Right.
That, you know, they need to get clear on that. And then that whole thing about what happened in Little Rock, Arkansas. So those are a lot of things that we're going to be talking about this evening. But before we get started, one of the things that's near and dear to me, and I talk to you guys about it all the time, is that I want to talk about what I'm calling a gentleman's agreement.
Uh-huh.
Why is it that men have such a hard time keeping their word? We all do it. We tell our children, our friends, and our colleagues. We agree to do a favor. For example, we pick a person up at a certain time. We repay a debt. To return a phone call, but for whatever reason, we are unable to keep our word. We were not taught the importance of one's word. Didn't our parents teach us that our word was our bond? Okay. We have completely forgotten this very, very important courtesy. Apparently, most black men today don't know why it is so important to be a man of your word or what it means to keep commitments. Some believe it is just a harmless, insignificant comment, and there are those individuals who have no intention of honoring their word when they give it, and others who simply act as if they forgot. Being a product of the 60s, we were taught that our word was a very valuable asset. It was considered a binding agreement, like a firm handshake. You kept your word. When we no longer trust that another person will keep his word, or when an individual's word begins to mean nothing, as a society, as a group, we all lose. When a father gives his word to his son that he will attend his recital and fails to show up, you crush his self-esteem. When a husband tells his wife that he will pick up the children on Saturday and doesn't show, the children pay an emotional price. On your job, if you miss a deadline to complete an assignment, there will be some consequences, and it could very well cost you your job. We've all experienced this. You receive a late-night telephone call. It's a friend calling, requesting a favor. The favor was to come to the friend's home because it was an emergency, and they wanted to go to the hospital. The friend tells the person that they'll be there in 15, 20 minutes. The friend arrives almost an hour late. When they arrive, the friend is unconscious, lying on the floor. Keeping one's word can be a matter of life and death. That's how important it is. When you give your word that you will do a favor to the person requesting the favor, that trust that you will keep your word. They trust that you're going to keep your word. What can we do about it, brothers? What can we do about the brothers who routinely fail to honor their commitments or their word? Unfortunately, there's not much that we can do about it. We can, however, take responsibility for ourselves and clean up our own acts. By setting the example, we can begin to turn this major flaw around, which will have a positive impact on others who are in our inner circles. As African people, we have to reclaim this very important tradition that our word is indeed our bond. Lifelong friendships, personal relationships, and acquaintances have been destroyed all because a loved one or a friend made the decision to ignore their commitment and not honor their word. This can easily be corrected, fellas. As we settle into the 21st century, let us agree that we will offer an apology the next time we fail to keep our word. It just may save a life. That's what the commentary is for this week, fellas. So you can introduce our guest,
your
Mr.
Word.
O'Guy.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Again, you listen to Men Speak on Talk Time Radio, the world's greatest radio. I'm Kamari Ondai with my host, Richard Lundy. Again, we're once pleased to have in our studio, Brother Patrick Carroll. How you doing, sir?
How you doing?
And another brother who is no stranger to me or anybody in this room, but he may be a stranger to you. In any event, he's a good brother. I'll let him say his name. I don't want to mispronounce your name. Move up closer, my brother. Close.
Good evening, sir. Good evening. This is Jehuti Imhotep, mentor.
Yes, sir. And what's your claim?
To fame.
What's your claim to fame?
I don't know.
Yes, come on, brother.
Conscious black man, father, son, community developer, community nation builder.
Uh-huh. All right,
there you go.
There you go. That's what we want to hear, brother.
All right.
Speak it. Speak it. Hey, Carol, you know, this guy, he's a man about town. He's a community activist. He's an excellent barber.
And, amen.
Amen.
He hooked me up, sir.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah. Hooked me up.
Thank you for that.
So the format has been set up, but one of the things we're going to talk about is an article that was in the final call.
Right.
But
right.
Is there something you want to talk about before we get to that?
Well, I just want to point out some things that will help stimulate the discussion and the dialogues. You know, some brothers might have some cobwebs there.
Okay.
I was looking through the news, and a couple things that stood out to me was that there was a statement in there that 15,000, there were 15,000 Americans out of all the Americans in this country. We're talking 300 million.
Right.
15,000 Americans earned $700 billion last year. just to whet your appetite, just to think, just to resonate with you a little bit. 15,000 people earned $700 billion.
In 1 year.
And I just cannot believe that that's all good, that ain't somehow tied back into our ancestors' enslavement.
Right.
Another thing that they had in the newspaper was the state of Ohio they talked about overtime. I worked for the state at one point in time, and I didn't really know that they had overtime, but I guess they do. State agencies have overtime. Mm-hmm. And it said the state of Ohio spent $111 million in overtime in the first 3.5 months of this year.
Right, right.
So we need to think about that. We're the taxpayers. Now, who okays the overtime? Now, look who gets the overtime. Now, let's see how many African Americans are included in this group. Well, the group that gets the most overtime are psychiatrists, if you can believe that. State workers that are psychiatrists. Psychiatrists were paid $205,000 overtime since January. How many brothers is in there, fellas? Come on, man. Come on, man. The second largest was nurses. Oh, yeah. We all know about nurses. You know how many black nurses we got, okay? Nurses have been paid $76,000 in overtime since January. Mm-hmm. And then, last but not least, insurance analysts for the state. How many brothers and sisters work in that area? They were paid $36,000 overtime since January. I mean, now, come on, man. I mean, you know, that's our taxpayers' dollars. Somebody needs to be accountable for how they marshal that out. In 3.5 months, they paid that much money? I mean, right. You know, what's going on? What's going on if they keep saying that they can't provide us services?
Well, what you do with that is you multiply that by four, because they're only talking about the first quarter of the year.
Right.
So that's going to grow exponentially as the governor also speaks about budgets being tight and unable to do this and unable to do that. That oftentimes comes from a lack of hiring when they talk about no jobs.
Right.
Okay, so in order to get the work done that they need to get done, instead of hiring the five people that they need, they keep three. And they just overwork them.
Right.
Just so, you know, they say they don't have the jobs. Yeah, you do. You can tell by the overtime. The overtime is 1.5 times a normal salary. So you're paying 1.5 more people.
Exactly.
With that money, but you just don't have those people
on board. Exactly.
On the article for about the guy from Little Rock, the reason that I thought that was an excellent article is because if you just substitute the city for any city USA, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
We're talking about the same thing. So, you know, in the article, the police chief has gone on record as having said that black-on-black crime violence was a problem and that he attributed it in part to the economic conditions. And my question is, don't we already know that?
Right, right. Right.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like he just realized that this is happening in his hood. My question to him is, what task force could you convene to get to watch over whoever is supposed to be patrolling the people that you're talking about?
Right, right. Yeah. Right.
And then are you going to evaluate them?
Right.
You know. Right. From a psychological standpoint, are you going to sit there and pick their brain and see if they're just going to be biased on one end or the other?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you talked about last week.
Yeah, how can you
test them for bias?
How are you going to do that?
Right.
I mean, is this guy white? Is he white?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I mean, so we're coming from a white perspective,
right?
And he's appalled at the black community, black on black crime,
right?
You should be appalled that your people put us in this situation.
I remember years ago when I worked for the city of Columbus, and they were talking about the police brutality and those kind of things, and they were going to have these oversight committees that was going to and one of the things, I mean, they didn't like me saying that then at the time, and they still don't like to hear people say that. But to me, you can't have a task force of people that don't have no clout overseeing the police conduct.
Yeah, that's true.
You can't have that. You know, anybody that's going to oversee that kind, first of all, they try to intimidate you when you go out to the facilities. Like, there's different police facilities that they have around the city. And when you go out there to investigate somebody being brutalized or whatever, they try to intimidate you so you won't follow through on it.
Sound like the school system.
those are some of the things that you know we have to address and we have to deal with. We have to stop playing around with those things. You know, when you consider the crime and violence and the explosion in crime, what are we doing about it? You know, we've had a mayor in office almost terms, 12 years.
Yeah.
You know, tell me what has come out of that office that addressed the issues of African-American males and the violence and the miseducation and the crime that's perpetrated against black males. Has anything come out of there?
Mr. Lundy, one thing I'd like to say to us here on this panel and to the larger city, black nation, is all of these statistics that you're giving us, we all know about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this man is talking about creating a task force to look into the black-on-black crime.
Right.
You don't need to create a task force. You know, you can ride down to the hood and look out the window. Okay, ride through the hood and notice that you're locking your own doors because you're worried about what's going on.
Right.
But the larger challenge to me for us as a community and as a village is that recognizing that the system has no intent on helping us through this because they know they put us into this, it's on us to do our work.
Right.
Okay? And I'm talking about the whole spectrum. Okay? Black men come home to lead their families, help raise their children. Sisters let them in.
Yeah.
But then once what we do also is we come together to start policing and securing our neighborhood. A young girl got raped, 13 years old, at a house a couple of blocks from her house at 6 o'clock in the morning because she was waiting on a school bus.
Mm-hmm.
She shouldn't be out there waiting on a school bus by herself.
Right.
Now it's happened. Unfortunately, it looks like it was a black man who actually raped her.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. The brothers in that neighborhood and all of our neighborhoods should now be patrolling our bus stops.
Right.
Okay, there's enough of us unemployed or underemployed or that are working a different shift so that 6 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning, you can drag yourself up. It feels good when you get up in the morning and you're doing some work.
That's right.
Get up, walk on down into the neighborhood, speak to the babies, let them speak to you, and make sure they're safe. Mm-hmm. Because I have four daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine my baby out there at the bus stop. It's dark at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
She's 13 years old out there waiting on the bus. She worried about everybody that walks by.
You know it.
You know, and this man walks up and does something wrong to her. We need to police ourselves, not only for security reasons, but for the economic uplift of our neighborhoods. Because when we start policing our area, we start keeping track of what's good and what's bad, and then we can start changing it, you know?
Right.
So we have to do our own work. The mayor and the city and the metropolitan offices, we know what they're going to do. They're going to look right at us and say, oh, we can't help you, you know?
Right.
So let's help ourselves. Let's stop crying to the community, I mean, to the city, to the man, the system, and turn that crying inward. When you point one finger, but there's three coming back at you.
Right.
Let's deal with those three that are coming back at us and rebuild ourselves.
All right. Okay, this is Men Speak on TalkTimeRadio.com, the world's greatest radio. To get in on this conversation, feel free to give us a call at 1-877-932-9766. That's 1-877-932-9766. And the discussion is whatever you want it to be.
Call us up, black people. Let's do this.
Yeah,
it's open discussion.
Piggyback on something that Damon said, and I think I agree with you in part, Damon, that you know we have to do some things, and that's what we want to get into and really talk to. But one of the other things that we have to also do that we don't do, and we have done a horrendous job, is we still have to make people accountable to get paid.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
See what I'm saying? So you have to make them uncomfortable. You can't just let them just go around shaking hands, kissing babies, and they doing all these great. They have a dance for you at the end of the year, old school dance, and everybody get to go in and pat the mayor on the back. No, we need to talk about this. This guy's been in office 3 terms. Okay, and to me, that right there smacks of some kind of something that's not right in the sense that the state of Ohio is a Republican stronghold. And we sitting here in the state capitol with a Democratic mayor. And he's been in 3 consecutive terms. Last time, didn't have anybody running against him. Come on, man. You know, we got to make it uncomfortable. You know, we got to make it, you know, with this guy, I got to say, well, I don't want to come out into the community too much because these people know I ain't doing a darn thing, you know.
Which, once again, speaks back to community mobilization. All of those things you said are true. And it takes us, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, you know. And right now we squeal at home. We go home and we close the door and we whine to each other.
Right.
But when an issue comes up that we need to address, we don't organize, and show up. I'm not talking about a prayer vigil. We're going to overcome.
Right.
But we're going to need to overcome with putting boots on the ground.
Right.
And maybe boots in people.
Right.
But, you know, that's what we have to do. We have to get our work together. Mm. You know, I'm tired of listening to, you know, right. they're not doing this right.
Right. Right.
Let's us do what's right.
Right.
And then stand right. in their chest and right. say, okay, right. there
well,
it is.
Well, I'm going to piggyback off of both of y'all and say that, you know, for one, we've never left the plantation. That's right. number one. You know,
true.
And if
true.
You think you have, look out your front door.
Think again.
And let a police look officer again. Come by
yeah,
and
yeah.
tell him, he's going to tell you to get in the house. What you going to do? You know, the next thing is, and back to Brother Minner, we got to stop waiting on that Captain Saver, community. You know, and start solving our own problems because we actually know what they are. We talk about them all the time.
All
right. I'm tired of that nappy head boy over there being bad. Mm, well, go over there and give him a word to the right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to stop acting like there ain't a war being waged against us.
Absolutely.
Now, we have to wage the war. Right. We have the same capabilities that everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
If you just put your mind to it and look at the person look just like you and don't look at him as an enemy.
Right.
Good point.
Yeah, those are excellent points. Yeah. Those are all good points. And again, this is what we want to hear. We want to hear from you, the listening audience, you know, because we want to talk about solutions. We want to talk about things that we can do to begin to get the man's foot off our neck.
Yes, sir.
You know, because it just, I mean, you know, again, two things in the news. I don't know if you guys heard it. 8-year-old shot himself in the foot the other day. And what happened was the guy in the house had a gun and he left it in his shoe. And he went in the other room.
Oh,
so the little kid got the gun and he, you know, and that was just splattered all over the news. That was major, major, major. That's not major news.
No, it's
that's not.
That's
not major news. The major news is how did the guy in the house get the gun?
Yeah.
So Columbine.
Can I
Columbine is some news. I mean, why is that white boy with an arsenal? And then we understand that was a mistake
right.
by a parent.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, we make mistakes.
Right.
But you purposefully got an arsenal for this boy. Not no video games.
Right.
You got an arsenal for this dude. Mm. You know, some of the weapons I can't even pronounce.
Right.
Right.
You know, but
right.
you got them.
Right.
And he put them in a book bag, go down to school and just, you know, mow down some people. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, but you're talking about a young boy who just is curious. You know,
right.
Now I'm not minimizing it,
right.
but let's just keep it where it is.
Right.
Now, we have to understand that most of the people that are looking at our situation and our children are desensitized to our children.
Absolutely.
So much so that it makes our children desensitized to their own situation.
To themselves. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is time for us to stand up. You know, my child at 10 or 11 years old is still innocent.
Right.
There is nothing wrong with him making mistakes.
Right.
I cannot be a parent and be a hypocrite and say that I didn't make any.
Right.
I mean, come on, y'all.
Right. Brother Minner.
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback on something that Patrick said here. He spoke about the little nappy head boys across the street being bad and a parent or in a neighbor needing to step over there and speak.